You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Screen Heroes. This is episode 202. We, of course, are part of the Heroes Podcast Network. I am Derek, one of your regular hosts. I have with me my two lovely co-hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hi, guys.
Hi, hi. This week, we are continuing our segment Bad Movie Reviews with the film Surf Ninjas, which apparently is controversial to say it is a bad movie, because that sparked some interesting conversation about the 1993 masterpiece. But we will be talking about that a bit later in the show. Of course, we start things off with our news segment, talking entertainment news going around. And we have a lot of stuff actually to talk about. It was kind of a busy week this week as far as entertainment news is concerned. First things first. Let's start with a weird one that I can't speak to a ton because I didn't watch what it's based off of, but Nicolas Cage is apparently going to be leading a Tiger King adaptation. Guys, thoughts? Good idea, bad idea? I know so little about Tiger King. I missed that whole thing.
I mean, it's basically the state of Florida. Yeah, that's it.
As a person?
Yeah, it's a documentary on the state of Florida.
Okay.
Everybody in there is a terrible person. And yeah, that's it.
I didn't watch it either, so I don't really have an opinion other than the fact that Nicolas Cage is amazing in everything he does. So I'm sure it's going to be a classic.
Okay. Well, so he is slated to play Joe Exotic, who's like that lead dude with the blonde hair and the handlebar mustache. It's a TV miniseries that'll end up on CBS in some form, so you can stay tuned for more information on that if that is something that you're interested in. I don't know, but yes, Ray.
No, I don't know. I understand that a lot of people watch the show to see what kind of a train wreck it was. And I understand, like, I get that. I understand why they wanted to watch it, but it just seems so weird to me to validate these people. Like, they already got paychecks for the documentary, and now, even while some of them are in jail, they're going to get larger paychecks for their likeness being used. Like, we're rewarding these terrible people. So I just feel a little conflicted about this. Nicolas Cage is amazing. I love him, but
fair enough. Fair that's enough. All. That's fair.
All.
I understand. Okay, so moving on from that, Sony has decided to finally provide a label for its Spider-Verse characters, and I say Spider-Verse because that's not the name that they picked, which I assume has to probably do with some kind of copyright trademark issue that they don't fully own. So Sony has decided to call it, quote, I want to make sure I get this right, the Spider-Man universe of characters. Really rolls off the tongue. The SUC, as it were, which is just awful.
The suck?
The suck. Yep. Yep, that is awful. So that would include all of the Spider-Man stuff, all three incarnations of Spider-Man, Venom, the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse cartoon film, animated film, excuse me. And I assume anything else that they do that involves Gwen Stacy or Spider-Woman or whoever. Guys, reactions on the suck.
It's bad.
It's a bad name, but I'm looking forward to more of their stuff. If Sony can make more movies like Into the Spider-Verse, then I'm all for it. But they should rethink that.
Yeah, I mean, the hashtag's got to be terrible.
Hashtag know? Spider suck.
Because right? I mean, like, look, the DC extended universe or expanded universe, whatever, you know, wasn't super great either, but at least you could narrow it down to the DCEU, and that was an easy enough hashtag. And then they moved to the worlds of DC, and
nobody moved with them,
and nobody did that because it was much clunkier, right? Mm-hmm. The Marvel Cinematic Universe is easy. It's the MCU. You know, Star Trek and Star Wars are easy because it's just those two. This is very clunky. You know, at least call it the Spider-Man Cinematic Universe, the SCU or something like that. This just seems to be different for different sake.
Yeah.
You know, which is never, it's rarely good. That really rarely works out well. So there you have it. The Spider-Man universe of characters. Awesome. It's good stuff. Switching gears to DC, we've learned a little bit more about the Black Adam movie. And I thought, Ryan, this would be a good thing for you to talk about since you brought the story to our attention. Some of the characters and groups that they want to include in the Black Adam solo film.
Yeah, I think it's been around for a little while. The rumors have been about the Justice Society of America being a big part of the film, being kind of the, I don't know if they're going to be the villains or if they're just what it's going to be. But yeah, there have been some casting rumors and things like that for who the descriptions of who they're casting and trying to match that with the Justice Society characters. Hawkman and Hawkgirl are supposed to be a big part of it. Dr. Fate is a big part of it. But they haven't revealed too much beyond that. So it's hard to say who else is going to be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say the JSA might be villains. I think like it's a weird thing to think about, right? Because this is another villains, you know, solo flick. I don't know if they're going to try and paint Black Adam as more of a anti-hero type character. Like they've turned Harlequin into a very anti-hero character over the years. I don't know. I'm not really sure what to expect. The JSA is a pretty unique group with some really standout characters, and I'm concerned about introducing so many characters in a Black Adam film. Ray, do you have any thoughts?
Well, my thing is, Black Adam isn't just like, I don't know how you change him into an anti-hero. In comics, he's been, you know, a dictator who's committed genocide.
He's like Dr. Doom, basically, right? Like DC.
He's a really bad dude. And I'm not saying that Harley hasn't done bad stuff. We all know she has. But I just feel like there's a little bit of a difference between them, and it might be harder to sell one over the other.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you there. I think Harley, because her character hasn't existed anywhere near as long, is also easier to change course with, because there haven't been decades of comic books written about her, right? She was right. Invented in the 90s. And so it's easier to make that course correction, because a lot of our characters have changed from what they first started as. You know, Batman's come a long way, for example. But I'm with you. I think it's weird. What's personally frustrating for me is probably the fact that Green Lantern will not be involved, even though there was a Green Lantern in the JSA, but it was a very different character, so I assume we will never see that character on the big screen. And I think you guys agree with me on that.
It doesn't really bother me at all. I have no desire to see that character on screen.
I meant agree that he won't be in the movie.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with like nods to him or whatever, but yeah, they don't need to. But my big thing about it all is that they're really like, they're banking on The Rock hard, and he's not pulling people into the theaters like he was 2 or 3 years ago. It's, you know, ever since Baywatch, it's kind of been, nothing. He hasn't been anything crazy. And so the fact that Warner Brothers is putting all this, everything into this Black Adam movie when they already have successful DC movies that he could come into as a supporting character is really frustrating and worrisome.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of that. He has been in some big stuff. I mean, Jumanji and its sequel have been incredibly successful. Hobbs and Shaw made a fortune, as much as I don't want to see that movie. it made a fortune, and Rampage did well in the theaters also. So, I mean, he's definitely still popular, but I agree with you. I don't know why you wouldn't introduce him with other characters that you've already established. Make him the villain in Shazam 2 when you already have Shazam solidified. It's a weird choice.
There's other rumors saying that he's like trying to throw his weight around for when he appears in the Shazam movie, and that it needs to be Superman and Shazam versus Black Adam instead of just Shazam versus Black Adam, which would be great to see Henry Cavill come back. I doubt they'd go that route, but him trying to kind of flex his metaphorical muscles in this case to get two huge DC heroes up against his one DC villain is kind of like, come on, man, you got a big ego. We know, we get it.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of stories about the sets of the Fast and Furious films, right? You know, he and Vin Diesel had a pretty big falling out and stopped talking to each other for a while, and then he got his spinoff, and that put the next Fast film on hiatus, a delay.
Which angered Tyrese Gibson, and he threatened to quit if The Rock's in the next one.
So, I mean, that's not great. I mean, look, you know, say what you want about Vin Diesel, but that is his franchise. You know, it was so important that the franchise was floundering that he came back and brought things back on track. So,
and not only that, but I mean, he bought part of the IP. Like, he owns part of the Fast and the Furious IP. He did the same thing with Riddick. So, I mean, with these IPs that mean a lot to him, he goes all in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, The Rock coming in and causing that kind of problem, you know, I don't know. I hope he doesn't try and do that with DC. I don't think that's the right move for Warner Brothers to let him kind of lead the way he wants to.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's strange because the DC EU doesn't really seem to have that central actor that's kind of like the focal point, right? Like the MCU had Robert Downey Jr. He was kind of like the leader even in the real world.
And yeah, he was the linchpin of the whole thing.
He helped, you know, other actors negotiate pay and things like that to try and keep things more balanced. And the DC side doesn't have that, you know, with Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill both gone, the veteran then is Gal, but she, you know, I don't know if she's really taken that type of center role either, because she's only been on screen with the other characters. I mean, hardly at all, right? So it's kind of a weird situation.
Yeah, it is tough.
Ray, any thoughts before we move on?
No, I've said my piece. I appreciate all the good stuff The Rock has done, but I truly think that he has a major ego. And when you get people like Vin Diesel and The Rock and Jason Statham all in one room, it's probably not a good thing.
That's a lot of alpha males.
Yeah, they all have similar contracts. They can't lose fights. They, something about like they have to have a certain amount of screen time. Like, that's a lot of diva stuff right there.
Big time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we only have a couple more pieces of news to talk about. Let's talk about the exciting one, which is that Taika Waititi is directing and co-writing a Star Wars feature film.
Before we move on, did you just call him Taika Waititi?
Taika Waititi.
Okay, it sounded like you said Tika, like Tiki Torch. But yes, it's very exciting. I think all of us here, I mean, for me, Rachel and I kind of talked about this earlier, but like mm-hmm. the fact he has bumped into my personal and on Rachel's personal like top directors. He's probably in my top three, maybe. Like he's awesome, and everything he does is resonates with me. So I'm really, really excited for this movie, and being Star Wars being a property that I very much care about. Yeah, I couldn't be more excited about that project, even though we know literally nothing about it. I'm very excited.
Yeah, same here. Just to piggyback on that, because he pretty much said all of my sentiments, it's that A Taika story is unexpected. It's hilarious, but also emotional in a really wonderful sense. So that man, like I used this example when we were chatting online, and if that man wanted to create a whole film about the aftermath of the Empire's fall just on the Ewoks' home, it would be silly, but it would also be very gut-wrenching at the same time. So even though that's a story I never thought I wanted, I would watch it because I believe he could do a really interesting job. Now, I know that's not it, but I'm just saying, like, he's going to pick something out there and random, and he's going to do an amazing job on it.
What do you think, Derek?
I agree with you guys. I mean, I've loved everything of his that I've seen, and I want to see the stuff that I haven't had an opportunity to see. I think it would be a nice, refreshing change of pace to bring a brighter sense of levity to the Star Wars universe. They tried to make Star Wars bright, right? A New Hope is fairly bright, and The Phantom Menace is fairly bright as far as overall tone. And it never really seems to stick. You immediately get darker and darker, whether or not you personally like the films or not. And so maybe bringing in some better sense of humor and style and just kind of a freshness, because Star Wars has just been very serious over the years. And even Clone Wars is wrapping up in an incredibly serious way. The Last Jedi was serious. Obviously, The Rise of Skywalker was. So, you know, maybe he'll do something different and he'll go against his pattern and do something serious. But I would like to see him bring his sense of joy to the Star Wars universe.
Do you have a specific story that you'd like to see him do, either of you guys?
You know, I don't think that I do. I think that he would definitely have strengths in playing with a lot of non-human characters, because you can do some off-the-wall stuff with that that's very unique.
I also think that he would be really good at creating new weapons. Like, for a vast universe in the films, we've only seen a couple different types of weapons, so I feel like he would be really good at that. Not just like force ones, but any of them.
I want to see him do the Revan story, because he like, if you've seen Jojo Rabbit, which I know you two haven't, so spoilers, or no spoilers for that, but there's very dark points in that movie, and a lot of the movie is also very light, and the whole point of Revan is that he was the first Jedi that could balance the light side and the dark side and be the one that walked the middle path. And so you would get both those elements with him. And I think that that would be a really interesting story. As much as I don't know if I want to see another big Jedi story, that would be one that I think is different enough to be interesting.
I would absolutely be up for that. I think that's great.
Me too.
No qualms there. Yeah. All right. Anything else on the Star Wars front that you guys would like to touch on?
I think I'm good.
I don't think so.
Happy late Star Wars Day to everybody.
Right. Revenge of the Fifth.
that is what we're recording. Yep. All right. Well, I think this is probably a good time to move on. Were there any other news topics that you guys really wanted to touch on this week?
I don't think so.
No, I'm good.
Okay. The only thing I'm going to slide in there is that we are going to be reviewing next week the Demolition Man film, because this week Sylvester Stallone announced that Demolition Man 2 is actually in the works and is moving along in pre-production stuff. So we're actually going to talk about Demolition Man next week.
It's going to be my first time seeing the movie, and all my life I've seen previews, I've seen clips of it. You know, Wesley Snipes has the crazy bleached hair and they use seashells for toilet paper. And I was like, this is going to be a bad movie review, isn't it? And then 2020 happened and I'm like, oh, okay, so that's the future we're in. No toilet paper and Costco owns everything. All right.
It's Taco Bell. Taco Bell wins the fast food wars.
Yeah.
Everything.
Spoiler alert.
Yep, that's the entire movie, man.
That's it. That's the. Right. I'm looking forward to it. I love Demolition Man, and it's been a while since I've watched it, so I'm looking forward to that.
It came out in 1993, and it has the same year as the movie we're reviewing today, and yep. It also has a connection in Rob Schneider, so that's exciting.
Yes, it totally does. Oh man, two Rob Schneider films back to back.
Rachel is not happy about this at all.
I just can't, you guys.
I don't even know. Has he even been in a movie that we've covered over these 201 episodes prior?
Probably not.
No.
And then we're going to do him back to back. That's hilarious. Oh, man.
If only we could get him as a guest, as a follow-up, so we could have a full trilogy.
I mean, he's done other films. He's in Judge Dredd. We could do Judge Dredd after Demolition.
No, thank you. There's no, I have no interest in that. We can do Dredd and pretend he was in it.
Ah, all right. All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the 1993 classic Surf Ninjas.
Classic.
Recently on the Heroes Podcast Network, Echo Station.
Well, what's the main what's the main planet that Endor, the forest moon of Endor? It's a moon. So it's, there's a major planet, obviously, that it
is. The forest moon of Endor? Is Endor the actual planet then?
See, isn't that confusing? Yes. Is it the forest moon of the planet Endor, or is it the forest moon called Endor?
Kaiju Curry House.
Because I'm just wondering, are Pokemon kaiju?
They are pocket monsters. They are pocket monsters, Paul.
They're monsters, yeah, aren't they? They're
just, so... they are yokai, officially.
Yokai?
Yeah, so...
What's like... a yokai?
Red shirts and runabouts.
Something we've talked about before, and other people have, but there's so much of real-life history involved with Star Trek, from Gene Roddenberry's days, his time in the military as a bomber pilot, as a bomber crewman, you know, James Doohan serving, all these people and all these real-life events that have impacted things. That's very realistic of political and military leaders kind of resigning in protest at a decision they can't control.
Subscribe today at heroespodcast.com. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, and more.
All right, we are back to talk Surf Ninjas as part of our bad movie reviews segment. We do these every so often when the schedules line up.
More so when theaters are shut down. More so. I've been doing a lot of them lately.
Yes, absolutely. And it doesn't hurt when the film in question is free to watch on YouTube legitimately. Yeah. If you haven't seen Surf Ninjas or feel like checking it out, it is available on YouTube. Before we dive in, I just want to thank a couple of people who dropped us reviews out on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts. So there's just three people that I want to go through. One of you is from Great Britain, which is super cool. We can't always see when people review in the other Apple stores, because each kind of region or country gets its own. So we don't get to really see all of them. So back in March, Secret Honor left us a 5-star review, which was really nice. So I just want to, I'm just going to read it real quick because it makes me really happy. They said, quote, "I listen to a lot of movie-based podcasts, and this one is unusual. Instead of three guys, and yes, it's usually guys, cracking wise and attempting to be improv comics, SHP, which I assume stands for Screen Heroes Podcast, actually have conversations, intelligent conversations, and they treat each other, even when riffing, with respect, engagement, and intelligence. They sound like three people who actually like the movies. Who actually like the movies. Smart conversation and each other. Told you it was unusual," end quote. Sorry about butchering the end of that line there. Wow. So thank you
so
very
complimentary.
Much.
Complimentary.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
But the truth is, I actually don't even know Rachel or Derek. We've never met, and it just happened to work.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
We just Photoshop you, green screen you into basement all those years.
Yeah.
The other two reviews are also 5-star reviews, so thank you to both of you. They're from the U.S. The first one here is Avenger ZS. They said the hosts, quote, "The hosts are great and they cover a wide range of movies. The conversations are thoughtful and fun at the same time. Definitely worth checking out." So thank you, Avengers ES. And the last one here is from Lad Morgan or Lad D Morgan. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to, if the two D's go together or not.
D's always go together.
Yeah, we call that sword fighting.
Or docking.
Or docking, yeah, depending on the context.
Oh, man. They said, quote, "I came across this podcast a little over a year ago and have been listening ever since. The dynamic between the three hosts, Ray, Ryan, and Derek, really sell it as they cover an assortment of movies and topics that fans should enjoy. It's especially fun to listen when they have differing viewpoints on a particular topic and argue with one another. I've gone back and listened to all of them. They're really entertaining. If you love pop culture cinema, you definitely want to give this one a spin, end quote. So thank you guys for
yeah, that. Those were all very nice.
They really
we only paid for one of those.
So. we do truly appreciate it. At the end of the day, Apple Podcasts is still the number one place that people listen to podcasts, and having more positive reviews bumps us up in the ratings when people search for different things. Mm-hmm. So truly thank you. And if this was any evidence, if you leave us a review, as long as it's appropriate to read, it doesn't actually have to be positive. I want truthful reviews, but as long as it's appropriate, we will give you a shout out on the show and talk about it. So, but thank you guys, all three of you, for dropping those reviews. We really appreciate that. If you do leave us a review and you don't hear us talk about it within a couple of weeks,
call us out.
Yeah, because it just means we missed it.
Well, call Derek out, because Rachel and I are just lackeys.
Well, you can hit us up at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter, or you can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/screenheroes, and you can talk to us in there. You can catch the show live on Tuesday nights like we're doing right now. So thank you to all who are watching us live and chat about lots of fun movie stuff. Okay, guys, it's time to talk Surf Ninjas. I've drawn things out enough here. The 1993 film grossed $4.9 million domestically. And that's really all the financial information I have on this blockbuster classic.
The budget seemed to be approximately $17. So that's a pretty good profit on that.
Yeah, it's a nice return, man.
Yeah, not too bad.
So I have to ask, Ryan, why did you want us to talk about Surf Ninjas?
Well, I don't have a good answer for you. Well, mostly because, I guess for me personally, this was a movie that I watched a lot with my brothers growing up. And we watched a lot of this era of kind of, I don't even know if I'd call it a martial arts movie, that's being very generous, but kind of like Americanized kid martial arts movies. It was this and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies, Three Ninjas.
Three Ninjas.
There were several movies in that kind of genre in the early 90s, and I watched a lot of them. And this is the one that was probably the weirdest. Three Ninjas was fine, but this one was kind of out there, and I remember it being an odd movie, and Leslie Nielsen being the villain, and it was, you know, enough to make me go, maybe I should rewatch that as an adult. Hey, I'm on a movie podcast. Why don't I subject my friends to this torture as well? And that's the story.
Okay, well, fair enough. So when we posted that we were going to be covering this under our bad movies review segments, a few people came out in defense of the film, including a good buddy of mine who is very much into film. He's an actor and loves this movie, and I gotta pick his brain sometime about it. But I was really surprised because I had never seen it. I had kind of forgotten it existed. And usually when a movie is free on YouTube, that's not a great sign.
Right.
So, Ray, what are your... Well, let's forget spoilers, all that stuff. Let's just dive in. What's your initial overview feelings on Surf Ninjas?
Oh, it's a movie. It was a full hour and a half film.
It's very astute.
Yep.
Is that all you got for us?
Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. Okay.
No, for real, I think it's very possible that I would have loved this movie as a child, and watching it as an adult with jaded old eyes, just, you know, it was silly and a lot of stuff was very unbelievable, and not even the magic part. You know, I could get behind magic, but, you know, the cop letting a 16-year-old and 11-year-old just stay by themselves after a giant, like, murder fight at their restaurant.
He left a cop car there. A
murder fight. I do want to point out that on Rotten Tomatoes, the movie is quite split. Critics gave it an 11%, but audience members gave it a 68%, which is pretty
decent.
That's
a huge deficit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I of course have some thoughts on the movie as well. There are some aspects to it that I can appreciate from a kid perspective, the idea of the kid heroes and them, you know, becoming like warriors and all of that. I like that concept quite a bit. I found Leslie Nielsen to be completely wasted in this movie, personally.
Is the character racist or not? I can't decide. Like,
I mean,
is
as somebody who is not an Asian person at all, he's wearing clothing. He's wearing armor at times.
He's wearing clothing,
but there's no, well, because there's no yellow face. There's no like makeup work that's being done or anything like that. And so I don't know if it crosses that line. Other than he's wearing the clothing of the area that he's ruling, that he's physically in. I don't know if that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
I know that we've certainly seen much worse things that are very blatantly racist. This one is confusing to me. I'm not sure. So if anybody out there has thoughts on that, particularly if you're of Asian descent, I would like your opinion on that. I mean, the concept of the character seemed fine-ish, right? His face gets caved in the beginning and his hand is injured. And I actually thought that the fake metal side of the face looked pretty decent. I thought that was kind of a cool idea. But Leslie Nielsen is such a talented comedian that I just feel like he was really wasted. Ryan, you look unhappy.
Well, I mean, I'm only unhappy because I thought this was going to be like just horrible. And it really, for me, wasn't horrible. It was like, it was not good, certainly. But it had its moments of, you know, where I was like, where I felt kind of like a kid again. And aww. I could see why I enjoyed this movie as a kid. And yeah, Leslie Nielsen, I mean, I don't know how that happened. Like, who at the studio was like, you know, Leslie Nielsen, that's who we need for this villain. I can only imagine it happened because, like, he's very non-threatening, and this is a kid's movie. Like, if you reverse it and made Ernie Reyes Sr. the villain, and made, you know, Leslie Nielsen like a martial arts guy that saves the kids. Like, if you reverse those roles, Ernie Reyes Sr. would have been much scarier as the villain.
He was scary as the hero.
Exactly. So, I mean,
that's
I,
an interesting
I
point. I actually
I feel like
that.
It's, I think it's just for, you know, because he's non-threatening, really. He's
I think
kind
that's
of a
actually
bumbling
a
villain.
Fair point. I hadn't really considered it that way. Again, right? Like, it's part of the problem of watching a kid's movie, you know, for the first time when you're an adult, you kind of don't see it through the same lens. And I think that's a really good point. Because he is like, right? Like, you're introduced to him trying to rush to the phone to pick up his before the answering machine hangs up on the person, right?
Which is kind of a dated joke at this point, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but we know with that. I mean, that's right. Fine. So, like I get how, like, as a kid, that would have probably been funny. And the stuff with, like, you know, his hand going crazy at the end and that kind of thing, probably would have been funny as a kid. I think what threw me off the most about this movie is the severe lack of surfing that occurs in the movie.
Are you kidding? The whole climax is a whole city making surfboards and surfing to the place where the surfing is over.
That's fine, but like absolutely no ninja activity occurs on a surfboard in the film.
That's true.
At all.
There are some underwater ninjas though.
There are underwater ninjas who get knocked unconscious by a surfboard.
Right.
But no ninja activity occurs by somebody on a surfboard.
Something I want to bring up that I think is underappreciated about this movie is how horrible the ninjas are at their job, just in general.
They're like, the worst. Cops and the ninjas are worst.
Were you guys... okay, so I was watching this with my girlfriend, and she had never seen this before, so I figured I'd make her go through it also. When the ninjas first show up, like in the beginning of the movie, like out of the back of the, like, I don't even remember, like a bus or something.
And garbage. It was a garbage truck.
Okay. Yeah. And there's just like, their kids are at school and ninjas just show up to kill them. Like, what was your guys' reaction to that? You get no context at all.
Nope.
Ninjas just show up.
It's a little confusing, right? So like, that's actually after we see them the first time. The first time they show up is in the morning at the house, but the uncle, right. Yeah. The uncle takes care of them before the kids see them. And they get in what I think is the Volkswagen thingamajig or whatever.
No, it's just a thing. Yeah, it's Volkswagen thing. Right? Which was stopped being made because that hood and the way the hinges worked on the hood, if you got into a front-end collision with it, then it would decapitate the people in the car. Important point.
I actually I always really liked that vehicle. I always thought it was a
cool car, yeah.
Cool concept. So that was fun to see. But yeah, so they go to the school and they have like a special assembly because they have this like spiritual leader who's coming in. And I love the idea. This is like such like a kid nightmare kind of concept, right? The idea that like you're going to present in front of the entire school and this very important person and nobody has vetted your work at all. You're just right? Like, hey, you're going to do this, right? You're good. Yeah, totally fine. Okay. Can we see it first? Maybe that might be nice. Like, nope. Is there a dress rehearsal?
None.
There's nothing.
And then he pulls off a fantastic Beach Boys cover pun that I was not expecting.
Yeah, that was out of the blue.
And they're mad at him for it. I'm like, no, give that kid an A. It's amazing. He slapped that together in 5 minutes, story-wise.
He puts together like, this whole choreography for it and everything. It's like, come on, guys. Yeah. That's an A.
I mean, it was better than what I thought was going to happen. I really thought he was going to come up there and just bumble his way through something and it was going to be just like embarrassingly terrible.
Yeah, but that was actually cringeworthy.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah. I'm just going to throw this out there. Maybe you guys will agree with me. Maybe you won't. I think that this movie would have been near unbearable if Ernie Reyes Jr. wasn't as charismatic and as really decent. He's a pretty good actor. He was probably the best part of this movie.
Him and the little kid, his little brother, were very, they sold the lines as best they could. They were pretty great. The little kid, I don't remember his name, but he had some of the greatest lines throughout the whole thing. I remember every time he opened his mouth, I was like, huh, he makes a good point. I was just thinking that.
Right, because it's kind of a sarcastic little shit.
Yeah.
And Rachel identifies with that.
Also, the idea that he's a seer, but he sees through his Nintendo. His Game Gear is the coolest thing ever. Like, why isn't that concept used in more fantasy sci-fi stuff?
It was an interesting concept. And in the early 90s, like, that was really... I bought a Game Gear with my allowance because of this movie.
I believe you.
So that's an interesting thing to bring up, because I was a little surprised at how little, like, brand marketing was shown for the Game Gear. Like, I know it's a Game Gear because I remember what they look like. Right,
but they weren't in your face about it.
Right. And so I wonder how many kids like went home or like, I want that thing. And nobody knew what it was actually called.
There actually was a Surf Ninjas game for Game Gear. And I had that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh man.
That's cool. It was great.
I like that aspect to it though. The gaming aspect I thought was really cool. It was really unique. I think it still holds up as a cool idea. It's just, I was just surprised at like how little they focused on that. It was a Sega Game Gear.
Right.
Right. And it was just this tool that he had. It could have been any game system. So that was a cool idea.
The worst ninja in the whole movie, I'm pretty sure, happens during that school scene when the kid's like at the front of the class doing like geography, bad geography. And this ninja like does 20 flips right outside the window. And somehow nobody notices this blue and black camoed ninja outside the window. Right.
What were they camouflaging against?
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, the ocean, I guess. But like,
I guess
he's sitting at the window, like preparing ninja stars for like 40 seconds, and then Zat shows up and kicks him in the head.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's like the problem of like a kid's movie versus something more realistic, right? Because realistically, these ninjas would have waited till nightfall, snuck into the kids' rooms while they were sleeping. And that would have been the end of it, right? And it would have been dark and sad. But it's a kid's movie, right? So these are basically like Nickelodeon villains.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right? These are the villains that you would have seen on like a Kenan and Kel episode. And that's just, that's what they have to be. And so what's funny is though, they're dressed, aren't they basically dressed like the army guys in the Street Fighter movie?
Pretty much, yeah.
Except it looks like
ninja face coverings.
Right? I thought that was kind of funny. I wonder if it's like just the same prop department or something.
Probably. Or they have those costumes.
Great. Right.
That's how they got away with the $17 budget. They just stole a bunch of costumes and props from the archives.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, so the cop thing is a little
Tone Loke.
Yeah,
Tone Loke.
That whole concept is just was kind of unnecessary to the story, really, because he follows the kids and he ends up on the boat and they knock him unconscious and then he's like just along for the ride and super into it. But
I needed a vacation anyway. Let me go to this island where they're having a revolution to overthrow a warlord and help out.
But he never really contributes in any meaningful way or significant way. And the same could be said for Rob Schneider's character, but he's at least like the comic relief idiot.
He's supposed to be, yeah.
Right?
Whereas, comic relief is a bit of a stretch for some of it, but yeah.
That's fair. But Tone Loke is like the serious cop guy, and he doesn't like do anything of consequence once they're on the boat.
It's true. So also, it's weird typecasting for Tone Loke that the only two movies that I know him from, he's playing a cop, and that's this one and Ace Ventura.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot that was him in Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the second worst ninja in this movie is when they're at apparently their dad owns a sandwich shop or something like that.
Yeah.
And also in the scene I noticed when I was watching it that one of the kids is putting ketchup into the mustard.
Thing. Right, you know, they're terrible children.
Yeah, I don't know if that was just like they were like, yeah, this is what the kid would do, or if they just genuinely didn't catch it. But during that scene with all these ninjas just randomly break into the sandwich shop, which as I'm describing this, it sounds ridiculous.
In like the loudest way possible.
Yeah, they're not, the least ninja-like way. Rob Schneider is there, and a ninja starts going after him. And the ninja is just like punching the air around him until while he like puts on an apron and then just like spins around with a pan and hits him in the head. But the ninja is literally there like punching the air around him for a while. It is an uncomfortable amount of time. Yes. That's the second worst ninja in the movie.
See, I put him at number one because I think the guy in the classroom, if the uncle doesn't show up, I think he shoots the kid with that dart thing. But oh, no, he had a throwing star.
He's just really bad at being a ninja because the whole point of being a ninja is, like, stealth. And he's, instead of being stealthy and, like, sneaking along the ledge, he's doing backflips and front flips and side flips and cartwheels all along the ledge before
nobody noticed
the shurikens. I mean, that's true.
he rolled a nat 20.
Oh, God.
Or everybody else rolled a nat 1 for perception. Yeah, it was not that seems more likely to me than the nat 20. But yeah, it was, they're both bad. It could easily be swapped.
So I have a question about the uncle, or not the uncle, excuse me, the dad, Mac. Do you think the kids are parented so poorly and let to do whatever they want because Mac is a bad father? Or because he doesn't feel like he can really discipline these princes?
I don't know. I never really took it as they can do whatever they want, but he's doing the best he can. He, you know, in this instance, he's a single dad with two very rebellious kids.
Who owns his own restaurant on, like, it's a burger and milkshake place on a beach. You gotta expect that place to be really busy, and it doesn't look like he has any employees either. So I feel like he's just a person who is stretched thin, and he knows his kids are trying to dupe him all the time, and he just picks his battles.
Yeah, and Rob Schneider is hanging around all the time. Like, that alone is enough to stress you out. All you
wearing know. His underwear.
Yeah, that was a weird scene. Okay, like, it was funnier as a kid, but as an adult, it's just like,
why, dude? Why?
Like, another thing that bothers me as an adult more in this movie than it did as a kid by a lot is there's a lot of straight up like murder, no qualms about it. They're killing people, like Zatch blowing up their house while like 40 ninjas in there. He just murders those people.
It starts with Leslie Nielsen screaming that he wants these two kids dead, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, amidst the torture chamber, where he's literally, like, torturing people on tables and, like, extremely dark.
Like, these are children.
There's a lot of dark moments in here. I mean, later on in the climax fight, they're using dynamite, and then, like, there's a
lot of blowing people up. It's...
Yeah, and you have, you know, just guys with huge assault rifles and things like that. Like, there's definitely some intense stuff in here for a kid's movie. There's no doubt.
Well, I definitely did not, like, think about any of that as a kid. So, a kid in the early 90s, it was fine. It's probably not great for kids nowadays, but, yeah.
Well, so thinking about Rob Schneider for a bit, his character's kind of interesting because it's, like, at the time,
is it though?
Well, because I think his character appears different now than he probably was intended to appear at the time. I think at the time he was just supposed to be the funny idiot, but looking back on it with 2020, well, the year 2020 vision, looking back on a 1993 film, he's like that stereotype of the white knight hero, right? He thinks he's the guy, he's the prince, he's the rich guy, he's the expert warrior. No matter what anybody says around him, he's not willing to believe that he's not the central part of the story.
Right. Right.
Similar to Jack Burton.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
The thing is that Jack Burton...
He's lovable. I think it's the main difference.
He eventually lets it go too. Like, he realizes he's not the hero eventually.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy's denial runs throughout the entire movie, even at the climax, right before they sing again, doesn't matter. He still maintains that he's the king.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of the whole, like, his what if power? Did you find any humor in that?
I actually liked the idea quite a bit. I'm not saying it was executed really well, but I like the concept, right? Because it kind of, I see how a kid could think that that's a superpower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you buy him as a kid?
No, he was 30 years old. He was not in the 11th grade.
Did you look up how old Ernie Reyes Jr. was for this movie?
No, I didn't.
He was 21 for this movie.
He's so short.
Well, like, okay.
Rob Schneider's taller than him, and Rob Schneider comes up to, like, my tits. So.
the thing my girlfriend said when we started watching this movie was that she could see herself having a crush on Ernie Reyes Jr. when she was in 93, when this came out.
Okay, and yeah, I can see that.
The more I watched this movie, it seems like they were marketing him as, like, a JTT type.
Okay.
You know, remember that? She'd be the big Jonathan Taylor Thomas back in the early 90s from Home Improvement. Every girl was like, had posters of him. Maybe not every girl, but a lot of girls, and was crushing on him. And I feel like this movie was trying to set him up in the same way, but it obviously didn't work.
Yeah, I could see that.
Despite how charismatic he was in this movie and just overall probably the highlight. But yeah, it was, when I watched this movie with that in mind, I was like, yeah, they were really going for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That's a fair way to look at it. So let's get to the island. So they go to the island, right? The kids finally agree to believe all of this stuff. There's still very little evidence for them to go off of. So, but they are children, so whatever. And you get to have the montage of them building all of the surfboards. I was kind of expecting it to be more of like a training montage, given that it was a 1993 film and that was kind of like a cliche back then. So I was a little disappointed about how quick that went.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird scene to watch as an adult again, because like the seer kid sees surfboards pop up all around him because that's what he knows. And then he's like, are you guys woodworkers? You know how much time it would take to make that many surfboards, even for professional woodworkers with modern tools? It would take forever. And so if we're supposed to believe that, they spent like 40 days making these surfboards before they assaulted the island, because there's no way. It was so much.
Yeah, but I mean, they are the best woodworkers in the entire world.
I don't even think the best woodworkers in the entire world with the best machinery in the entire world could do that in less than a week or two.
like, we've seen some pretty crappy surfboards used as props too, but these were not them. Like, these were,
no, those were cool looking,
fine cut wood, like to cut the trees down, to shape them, to sand them, to waterproof them, to seal them. Like, it would just be ridiculous.
Also in this scene, you get to see Rob Schneider in a wetsuit. What did you think of that, Rachel? I mean, you got to see full junk basically.
Right. You know,
how did that make you feel in your loins?
I'm super turned on just right now talking about it, especially with the orange hair, the naturally orange hair.
There's a lot of moisture going on, I'm pretty sure, from both Derek and you.
So I have to say something. So Kelly Hu is a small part in this movie, but she's wonderful. And she's gone on to do a decent amount of work too. She distracts some ninjas by bringing them into a field and then they're gone.
Yeah.
And she says, I will tell you on our wedding night what I said to them. Mm-hmm. They're 16. Oh, God. They're 16 years old, and that's it. Derek paused the movie, turned to me, and was like, what do you think she said?
We had a similar moment when we watched it. We were like, what? These are 16-year-old kids. Or no, right? he wasn't even 16. He was 15, because 16 was like the day that he was supposed to become king or whatever. So, yeah, it's like, that's a little weird. Like, I don't know if that was a joke for kids.
Well, and then he doesn't get to find out either, because they don't end up married at the end.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're just dating.
Really disappointed about that.
So
also, like, 2 minutes after that scene, she's like, can we just date? I don't want to get married. I'm like, what happened in those 2 minutes?
It was the worst 2 minutes of her life.
Clearly. I guess. Like, don't get me wrong, I appreciate some of the messaging that happens towards the end of this film, but that doesn't seem like the time to have that conversation. Right. You know, that's just maybe wait on that a little bit until after the battle.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you have to give your 15-year-old boyfriend a boner in the middle of the fight to really get him juiced up. Mm.
Oh, I gotta say, like, those two kisses they shared were the least romantic, the least sexual. Like, they were gross kisses. How were they so bad at kissing?
No, it was because I'm sure for Ernie Reyes Jr., he was probably like, dude, I'm like a legal age adult.
Yeah.
And you want me to, like,
she kiss was 20,
this wait, 15-year-old?
She was 25.
Was she really?
Yeah.
No way.
She was born in 68. I looked it up to be sure.
Holy moly. Then never mind. I have no idea that they are just both bad at kissing. I'm sorry, Rachel. I take that back. I just assumed that she was like 15 and he just was a 21-year-old supposed to kiss a 15-year-old. And
that makes sense.
And that should be awkward, right? A good person should feel weird about that. But no, they were both in their 20s, so it doesn't matter.
No excuses.
Like, they could have easily dated in the real world without any issues.
Wow. There's literally no excuse for that.
Yeah, that was weird. That was awkward. So you have the big climactic fight. They attack the big base with the sticks of dynamite and everything.
Where we see the third worst ninja.
Which one is the third worst, Rachel? I want to hear it.
The one that falls down the stairs
three times.
Yeah.
The best part was every time he would get back up, he would fall back down. I was like, oh, he's going to fall. They're going to use that wide shot again. And they keep doing the wide shot of him falling down.
$17 budget. They had to make that use, you know?
Oh, man. Well, what was funny about it was I think it was the same wide shot, but they would only show different parts of it. So it looked like different shots.
Yeah. Yeah. That seems probably true.
Which is, you know, that's my analysis of the stair falling ninja. But at the end, he just, like, throws himself down the stairs.
Yeah, because he gave up on life.
I'm like, dude, you could walk. Just turn around and walk down the stairs.
He probably fucking killed himself after that.
Jesus.
He looks like he's the lone survivor.
Yeah, but not by the end of it, I guarantee you, off screen.
So what starts to get really weird, though, at the end of this movie is Adam, the younger brother, the seer, can all of a sudden like control the real world. And he's able to control Leslie Nielsen, Colonel, whatever his name is, his hand, his robot hand.
Yeah.
And that made for some kind of funny moments. I thought that fight scene was a little weird because you would think that like Johnny could have just like totally taken him in those moments, but like he stops to like, I guess he doesn't know what's going on and Adam didn't really tell him. I don't know.
Well, I thought it was a cool way because, I mean, obviously in that situation, probably most kids would want to be the warrior because that's the coolest one. So it was a cool way to give the seer some like combat abilities to like he's helping and his brother might not have been able to do it without him. That's kind of how I took it. And it was, I feel like that's a good way to, you know, kind of incorporate the kid that's maybe not as physically adept.
That's fair. I think it could have been a cool opportunity to like have him drop in items like weapons or like a barrel or something like that.
You mean
that,
like the octopus?
That was cool.
Like where he had to pick his weapon and he pulled the octopus out and put it in the guy's head and he got 500 points, which means nothing really because this is a game, but it's also real life. And
well, he had to use those points to pay for the octopus.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he got points back to use for a future thing, I think.
But he never cashed him in.
That never happens, yeah. So, but then Leslie Nielsen's character, I guess, is electrocuted to death.
Yeah.
In that little pool, which is kind of dark also.
Extremely. But I mean, his whole character was formed because an elephant stepped on his head. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, dark is it's pretty common in this movie. I'm not sure how you survive an elephant stepping on. How does an elephant step on only half of your head? The physics behind that are a little iffy. Like,
oh, agreed.
The elephant just like managed to just crush his orbit and go off to the like side just enough to where he has to have a full metal thing around his whole half of his head.
Maybe there's a Surf Ninjas wiki out there.
I hope so. If somebody hasn't started that, you should. We will sponsor it with our Patreon money.
Great.
No, we will. Great.
We'll start a new tier. We'll start a Surf Ninjas tier specifically for the wiki.
No, we should name all our tiers after the bad movies that we've actually enjoyed.
Oh, man. So, of course, the movie has the very typical hero's ending. The brothers save the day. Everybody's happy. But then there's a twist. The brothers give up the throne and say that the country should be democratic, which I thought was kind of a big statement for a children's movie to randomly make.
Not just that. Like, he says the government belongs to the people now, which is such a wonderful sentiment. But you really should have talked about this to somebody and set like up a parliament.
You've just, like, ruined somebody's life.
Right?
Who's devoted their life to this whole, like, yeah. But you're right, Derek. Like that, and honestly, that's something that I still remembered before I watched this movie. That at the end, he gives the power back to the people, and it isn't king. I remembered that through all my years of not having seen this movie, so it really resonated with me. And it's pretty cool. It's, I mean, I don't know. And then they sing Barbaranda to the Barbarom of Ishtam or whatever it is. Yeah.
I have to say that any movie that doesn't know how to end, so they just choose a random musical number, gains points in my book. Wow. All of a sudden, it's a lot better than it was.
So this movie had positive points for you, like in terms of on a 1 to 10 scale, it was not a 1.
I haven't ever completely hated everything about a film that we've watched. Like even A Wrinkle in Time and Miss Peregrine's were pretty to look at. So, you know, I've been able to find positives in everything. So that's one of the positives. I love random musical numbers. If I'm not expecting it, then that's hilarious.
Well, you got two in this movie.
And I think the message at the end of the film is pretty solid, right? That the kids give up wealth and power to give it back to the people, and the betrothed man and woman are willing to just kind of date and see what happens and, you know, break tradition and things like that. So you've got, you know, kind of a strong woman character who stands up for herself and a guy who's totally like, okay, that's cool. Let's just date. And like, everyone's good with it. Like, it's very positive messaging. Which is kind of cool. I mean, I don't know that you see that much anymore.
Well, in 93, yeah, I don't think there were a lot of kids' movies featuring like really strong female characters. And granted,
they were always very tropey if they did.
Yeah. And she wasn't like a big feature of a movie. She was only in, you know, a small part of it, but still was good to see.
Yeah, for sure. And first of all, I totally respect how they handled it. She's a child bride, and that right there is scary and frightening. And she's known her duty her whole life, but she respects her family and her people. So she's not subservient at all. She's just, she's accepted her lot in life. And I get the way she handled it, and that she just went to the guy she's supposed to marry and be like, look, maybe one day, but not right now.
Yeah, but let's do it on our terms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I truly appreciate how they handled that. She wasn't some weird rebel for no reason. She just advocated for herself.
Yeah.
So one thing we haven't really talked about is the choreography and stunt work in this movie.
Which was pretty...
Have any thoughts?
For it being a PG movie, it was pretty stellar. Having the Reyes... father and son behind it, they did the best they could with, you know, the budget they had, the other stunt people they had. So I appreciate it. I don't really think a lot stood out as like epic to me, not like some of their other work, but this definitely had it. The fight scenes were a high point.
I mean, the two of them, the father-son duo, I mean, they were fine. I think there's a problem when you pick somebody like Leslie Nielsen to be your main villain.
Yeah, he can't really fight or do any choreography.
I mean, that wasn't his thing when he was young and fit. And, you know, it's just kind of a weird situation. I felt that the fighting was the ninja aspects of surf ninjas was definitely lacking. I had kind of talked about that earlier. Like there's no ninja surfing. It just doesn't happen. And, even the surfing itself is still fairly limited in the movie, and nothing particularly like impressive is really done from a surfing perspective. So, you know, that part's a little bit of a bummer, but in 1993, CGI was not really much of an option and the budget was really tight. So, you know, today it would have been different.
I think that, like you said, Rachel, that the for a kids movie in 93 and for what I'm assuming was an incredibly small budget, the choreography was pretty decent. I mean, it wasn't mind blowing at all, but there were some cool scenes when they're in the, dad's shop and, Zatch uses the skateboard and, does some kind of improvised weaponry. I always like improvised weaponry, and I thought that was pretty neat. And certainly the scene in the cave where Zatch and Ernie Reyes Jr., I can't remember his character's Johnny, are fighting. You know, those two obviously train together, and you know, it was pretty obvious in that scene. So, yeah, I mean, I thought what we got from them, I still think that the fight scene from, like, The Last Dragon is more memorable.
Yes.
You know, so yeah, it wasn't anything insane, but I still think it was pretty solid for a kid's movie. And I'm disappointed that we don't see as much of those two in Hollywood these days.
I agree. I definitely agree.
Ernie Reyes Jr. was in The Rundown. I don't know if you remember that movie with The Rock and
I never saw
Sean William Scott.
Yeah. I'm not a Sean William Scott fan, so I skipped that one.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I was for a little while after American Pie, but then he started doing the same thing in every role, other than Evolution.
Right, that's an outlier. Yeah, Evolution's a wonderful movie.
Agreed.
Well, I guess anything else you guys want to do? Do you want to give it a letter grade? We usually don't do that on bad movie reviews.
Yeah. So why start now?
Right, okay. Okay.
Did you guys like Ernie? I feel like I don't know if I've really gotten from you guys. Do you like Ernie Reyes Jr.? Do you think he had the chops to really be like a lead man in the 90s?
I don't know.
Sorry. I think he could have. I think that he's very charismatic. I think he's a pretty good looking kid and obviously very talented as it goes to the choreography and the fighting style stuff. I think he would have been fine. Maybe not like big blockbuster stuff, but he easily could have like carried a show, or done like more just kind of kid level movies and stuff for a while. I think he definitely should have been in more.
Yeah.
It's surprising to me that between this and Ninja Turtles, he didn't get more work. I mean, I granted this wasn't, this movie didn't probably make that much money, but I mean, he was good at it. So I don't know. It's weird.
Now, I don't know where his career really took him, what offers he made and or had, and what he chose to personally do with those. But honestly, at the time, he seemed like he really would have fit in with the Nickelodeon group. Like, he could have hosted a few shows or been on one of their live action shows at the time. Like, I would have watched the hell out of something he was in, most likely.
Agreed. I'm done. That's all I really want to cover.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I just was looking up his IMDb real quick just to see. And I mean, he still does TV. You know, he was on a couple episodes of Superstore, an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, my girlfriend did recognize him from Superstore, or said she saw something about him in Superstore. So
a few other things.
He was in Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
He's in one episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's credited as Bob Number Two.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the negotiator where Doug Judy is in the diamond store, and he requests Jake to be his negotiator. And there are two guys and a woman tied up. He's one of the two guys.
Interesting. How did I miss that?
But I mean, he's been working. You know, he was in the Crystal Skull Indiana Jones movie, Rush Hour 2.
But certainly not in leading man roles like he was in this and Ninja Turtles.
Correct.
But he also has his own martial arts school that he still teaches to this day. So, I mean, he's still active there. And it's kind of interesting that you could go train at a martial arts school run by somebody who has a pretty decent history in Hollywood.
And maybe that's what his focus is. Maybe that's what he really does. And once in a blue moon, he'll pick up an acting role for fun or the cash.
Yeah, that should be it.
You know, and maybe he uses those roles to help fund upgrades to that place or what have you.
That's true. Could be.
You know. But yeah, well, I guess that's going to be it then for Surf Ninjas here on the Screen Heroes podcast. Next week, we will be talking Demolition Man in honor of the announcement that a sequel is actually coming, which I'm very excited about. Looking forward to that. Don't forget to join our Facebook group, people. We're having a lot of fun with it. We've been doing an MCU tournament, battling it up. We're down to the final four.
Yes, yeah. Down to the final four.
So that's pretty big. So we're going to do more stuff after that. I know Ray's got some other tournaments lined up. I don't know.
Man, as long as quarantine and no movies or concerts or parks are open, I'm going to come up with fun brackets for us to do.
Awesome. Yeah. So, of course, our group is facebook.com/groups/screenheroes. Join us out there. We love talking movies and TV with you guys. You can also find us at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. Ray, where can people find you?
I am at Siren Ray on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Ryan?
At Buster Props on some of those.
And I am the Star Trek dude. You can also find me starting next week back on the Gamer Heroes podcast. It's been on hiatus for a few months and I decided to revive it. So I'll be hosting that. I'll be bringing guests on each week. Ray's lined up to come on. Ryan's lined up to come on. So we'll be talking lots of different video game stuff. They'll be Eric actually
recycling as many hosts from as many shows as he can get.
That's, you know, damn it. Straight. Hey, look, if I already know that you do well on a podcast, I'm going to ask you to come on the show.
You gotten Ian to be on Battlefront with you yet?
I haven't talked to Ian yet about coming on the show. I got to do that.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to be it for us this week. As always, you know, if you want to support the show, follow us on social media, join our group, or if you have a couple of bucks, hit up patreon.com/heroespodcast. Help support the show. We have... Basically, here's how it works. You donate a buck or more to our Patreon, and that gets you access to ad-free versions of all of our shows, and they get released early as well. Sometimes it's a couple hours, sometimes it's a couple days. Kind of just depends on when the show is recorded. So come support the show out there if you can. Otherwise, we will be back next week. Thank you for joining us. We've been Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Kwan-su, dudes.
Kwan-su, dudes.